The first time that you glance at them, the woods are mysterious. You stand at the tree line from a field, and you look out into a army of trunks and branches and leaves that goes into darkness. And there's no way to know where that ends and what is inside there. But to a certain type of person, it is fascinating. And they walk along the edge of that woods and they hear things and they eventually venture inside and look at the dangers and the glories of what that forest has to offer. And one day they get to the other end of that forest and back, and they've built a path and they've run into paths that have been made by others. And after a while, the forest is just another known entity, and they look at this whole world that once was mysterious and dark and strange, and it can all be knocked down into a scientific pile of classifications and declarations and numbers. And people will look at it once it's this dull spreadsheet, and they'll say, "Why did you care about it?" Because they never stood at the edge of that tree line and wondered what the darkness held. This is about my relationship with phone freaking. This is Jason Scott. You're listening to the Jason Scott Talks His Way Out of It podcast, a podcast about technology, stories, and getting out of debt. Thanks to Jeff Atwood, Daniel Boyd, and Brenda Romero, as well as the hundreds of other supporters who make this podcast possible. I have this very strong memory of the first time that I ran into the black box text file on bulletin board systems. It starts with this very unusual line, "To all who dare." It's a simple circuit. A black box basically keeps the voltage of a phone line up around where ringing occurs, and its purpose is to fool telephone company equipment into thinking that nobody ever picked up the line. You see, back when phones were attached to the wall and had wires going to them, there were various voltages that would come in to indicate the state of the telephone, and it would be up at a certain voltage which would cause telephones to ring, and then when a person picked up the phone, the voltage would drop and the call would start being recorded as a actual phone call. And so the black box kept the voltage up. So if you picked up a phone with a black box attached, you would have ringing signals coming down the line trying to make the phone ring. But in between those, you could talk to people. And so your phone calls were free. And while we quickly head into this incredible future where telephone calls are not very expensive in the aggregate, at the time, they were, in some cases, pretty hard financial hits. If a person called you from another area code, that was a significant cost. And if you were traveling and you wanted to talk to somebody at home, you would have to use all sorts of tricks. A common one to save money would be to make a collect call home and then have a series of names that would give a message to the person. So you would say, I want to make a collect call from George to Wilma. And when the person picked up the phone, George and Wilma meant, "I'm fine. I'll talk to you later." So making a free phone call using the bizarre and arcane strangeness of the telephone system, I mean, that was catnip to a young teenager. As somebody who was making lots of bulletin board system phone calls and racking up bills and getting in trouble for them, the tantalizing aspect of being able to make a free phone call and be able to reach all these bulletin board systems and not be in danger of getting yelled at because I happened to call 312 instead of 914, I mean, it was completely irresistible. But deeper than that was the fundamental question of, why does this voltage make a difference? What's behind it? What is this great and glorious and dark machine that spans the globe and is capable of understanding things automatically? In the 1970s and the 1980s, it was already turning electronic and automated. But throughout the history of the telephone company, as things advanced, there were all sorts of bizarre and mysterious corners of the telephone network that were used by the company to keep track of things, do maintenance, be able to check if something was working or not, or simply to be used by employees in the course of work. And as people on the outside became aware of these corners or these tricks, sometimes the phone company would be able to advance past them and add more layers of protection, and sometimes they simply couldn't. There's a whole history of phone freaking that I want to really press right now, which is a book called Exploding the Phone by Phil Lapsley. I was very lucky to bump into Phil very early in his production of that book, and I gave him some thoughts and hints, but more than that, I knew Phil was the real deal. That book walks through the objective history of telephone freaking all through the 1950s, 60s, and 70s. And in doing so, he got the words and the ideas of people who, frankly, died off in droves during the book, enough that Phil told me that one interviewee he talked to said, "Should I be talking to you? There's a pretty conspiratorial tone to all of my associates dying after talking to you." But they were in their 70s and 80s, and they had this story to tell. My own story comes from simply using bulletin board systems, but I fell for these phone-freaking text files, these text files that would explain in all sorts of detail how the telephone system worked and all the little tricks and things you could type in or attach to the phone to pry out information or do things it wasn't supposed to do. Of all of these text files, all of them, the one that really strikes me is a series called the BIOC Agent 003 files. To some people, they know exactly what I'm talking about, but probably most don't. There were a lot of text files out in that period of time, 40-column uppercase affairs that would explain to you how to do this one thing, probably without much context. You'd be told, oh, wire this to this, and it just works. You know, the simplest of instructions, something you might get from an IKEA box. But there was this one series, and it was by a guy who called himself BIOC Agent 003. BIOC was a group, and I never, ever found out who BIOC Agent 003 is. I have no idea how old he is. I have no idea what life he lives. I have no idea what he moved into. I think that he's my last, final, unmet figure who guided me as a person. BIOC Agent 003's Guide to Telecommunications series was the top shelf quality text file for me at the time. Again, in a period of misspellings, all uppercase, and the most basic of instructions, he gave context, he gave explanations, he drew in text little diagrams to explain to you what the voltages did and what different systems were about. He was a person who, at a time of Post-it notes, did a chronicle, and these files went everywhere. I have them on textfiles.com, of course, but he was a giant in terms of how one could write. If I had to split it between BIOC Agent 003 and Count Nibble, these were people who wrote files not like they were rushed for time, but wrote them so that they would last, and they do last. I thought that the phone system was a fascinating thing. It was something that lived in the local central office. I mean, every town had a central office that was run by the phone company where all of the different exchanges would terminate and where the switching equipment would get the signals from outside or from your phone as to where the call should be directed. And you could walk up to these brick buildings if you knew to look for them, because it's where all of the phone lines terminated. And often it would have the phone company logo somewhere on the building, but sometimes it didn't. Sometimes it was just a little brick bunker, and inside was the machinery of telecommunications of the time. Some people would go through the garbage of these to get secrets and ideas, but so many of them were just simply end offices. All they were collections of shelves of crossbar systems, later ESS systems, that would direct phone calls, and there was nothing in the garbage but coffee grounds and donuts. And as time went on, I began to understand how the phone system truly worked. The way that it had these computer-like machines that would transfer tones between each other to tell each other how to direct the phone call. And there were test lines, things like loops and teleconferences that people could dial into if they were linemen or somebody who simply had the number. Or the joys of going through an entire exchange, you know, from 0000 all the way through to 9999 and seeing what strange things might pick up. And, you know, going deeper into this line of thought is that through these text files, I could sense that there was a shadow world, a phantom network that lived up on these telephone poles and came out of every home and into every office and into these mysterious brick buildings. And it existed in its own space. I mean, sure, it was copper wiring and junction boxes, but it was a place of its own. It's an entire other place. If you're intensely involved in something through a phone, you are not where your body is. You are in another realm. And I would call into teleconferences and live in these realms. And they are not of this earth. They are in a place that this earth does not touch. When the computers came along and allowed you to type and interact with others in both images and programs, that too felt like another other world that not everyone got to share. So I wanted to be there a lot, especially when I lived in Brewster and was incredibly unhappy with the day-to-day life of somebody who didn't fit in and didn't want to fit in and didn't feel connected with people in the way that he should have. I loved what was in those phones. And there was a place that was really special to me. I called it my office, but what it really was a phone booth. There was this phone booth that was something like maybe a block or two from my home in Brewster, New York, and it was in the parking lot of a gas station. And so understand that this was a major intersection, and there were two gas stations and a firehouse and a bridge that went off to another town. It was basically a major traffic point, but there was this one phone booth that was old school. It wasn't a glass and metal one. It was almost carved, it felt like. It was a wrought iron phone booth. It was built to last, and inside of it was a simple shelf and a phone. And I, at 13, would walk out into this office at all hours of the day and night, and that's where I would do my phone freak business. That's where I would scan for phone numbers or call unusual places or check out phone codes to see if I was going to be able to make free phone calls. Phone freaks learned that doing things from your house just wasn't smart. That was putting a big target on your back. Maybe it was easier to not have to leave your house, but you were just making it obvious where the trouble was coming from, and that was going to get you later. So walking out to a phone booth was the way to go. And I look back now at just how vulnerable I was. I was a 13-year-old boy inside of an all-glass box at a major intersection. But I would be there for hours, and when the light was on in the phone booth and it was dark at night, I couldn't see anywhere outside. I was in my own little spaceship, traveling through the night, finding out, did this work? Did that work? Did this voicemail work? Did this code work? I was in my ship, traveling through the night. And when I stumbled home, of course, my mother had no idea what I was up to, and my siblings had no connection to what I was doing. But I had been places. I had journeyed. I had talked to people or listened to answering machines or found a tone that was hard to explain and then wrote it down for later study. I was the deep bones research that's kind of always forgotten when people talk about, well, who's going to find this? I mean, who has the time? A teenager has the time. Even as we moved away from Brewster, and in the rare times I would get back to that town, I would go and check on the office just to see how it was. And there did come the day that one day it was just gone. My wonderful spaceship of the night just had been turned into a concrete, forgotten square. On Google Maps, you can still see the little scar of where my ship once lived. By the time I get into phone freaking, in many ways, the party is over. The rough and tumble work that people were doing in the 50s and the 60s and the 70s, loading into a car to get to a town to try something new and sitting around smoking weed and talking about where the system would be flawed and where they could exploit it. And then people sharing these one-of-a-kind numbers because nobody knew about them. All of that had crashed at the rocks of the online and BBS communities, and all that were really left were these text files that in many cases were transcriptions of hand-photocopied zines that explained these little tricks. Many of them had stopped working because the phone system had innovated against them, and so it really felt like I was holding on to a classic instrument long after all the great bands had played. But I could still find in these text files a love of this deep, dark, mysterious place, and in my own way, explore it, put the numbers down, and tell others about it. This is part of the reason why the Phone Freak section of textfiles.com is so huge. It's because I loved what people would write about the phone system, and anything I could find, I would put up there. In later years, in the 1990s, even into the 2000s, there are more generations of phone freaks, people who are really into the phone system, but may have never known a time of a rotary dial or ever touching a crossbar system. But they have found ways to do strange tricks, unusual approaches, and then documenting them for others. They found their own place long after I would have said that the party was over, and long after the people who came before me would have said the party is over. Apparently, for some, the party never ends. And it's inspiring, really, to see that there were later generations of phone freaks who maybe their world was a little more constricted and maybe a lot of the forest had been explored, but they too were coming into the dark and mysterious forest and finding their own new areas to explore. Describing them to each other and sharing them with each other and getting in trouble, getting some glory, making themselves experience a wonder, a happiness, a connection. A set of text files tell a story, but they don't tell the whole story of that first moment for each of them when they too stood outside of the forest, looked into the darkness, and thought, I'm going to find out what's in there. This is Jason Scott. You've been listening to the Jason Scott Talks His Way Out of It podcast. Thanks to James Bekoyanu, Sam Johnston, and the hundreds of other Patreon supporters who help make this podcast possible. I want to point out that this is my experience of phone freaking, but I cannot stress how great that book, Exploding the Phone, is, and how worth your time it would be to read this book, because Phil Lapsley did something that I just respect so much. He didn't just stop with the phone freaks. He could have. He could have just found a bunch of old men who had messed with the phone systems in their teens and early lives and then left it at that. But he went out of his way to find law enforcement and telephone company executives and ask them about the entire experience of phone freaking from the point of view of the phone company and law enforcement. And in doing so, he moves away from a simple recounting of days of yore and instead weaves a very rich tapestry of this entire strange chapter in human technological history. It's a real eye-opener of a book. You may think you know one piece of it, or you may have heard of something, and then he turns it around and finds out what was actually going on. It's a beautiful work, and I can't recommend it enough. If you've not been to the textfiles.com phone freaking section, it's pretty easy to find. Textfiles.com/phreak, freak. You can find out all of the text files I've been talking about, including Biok Agent. And if Biok Agent is out there somewhere, dude, give me a call.